This is Paul Quarrington. I'm going to read from my novel, Galveston. Hurricanes are created moment by moment, as though fueled by fresh time, by nowness. Take Hazel. Caldwell said that often, in barrooms around the globe, when he'd had three drinks too many and no desire to go up to his room. He would find some other lost soul and slowly work the conversation around to hurricanes, and then he would touch on their erratic nature. He would recite the science, hoping that his companion was too drunk and heartsick to interrupt. No one's really sure how a hurricane becomes organized, he'd say. They might get influenced by an upper tropospheric shortwave trough or something. And then, while his listener's eyes were still glazed over, he'd say, "The point is, hurricanes are erratic. Take Hazel." No one had predicted that Hurricane Hazel would work her way through the Caribbean and the Carolinas, up the Atlantic coast, and then, as furious as she had been at birth, kick the province of Ontario in the ass. Caldwell was 3 years old in 1954, and his earliest memory was of Hurricane Hazel. Granted, not all of the memory was genuine. For instance, part of the memory was of being put to bed by his parents, the pair of them beaming happily, proud of their little toddler. That never happened, because for one thing, his parents did nothing together. Sometimes Caldwell imagined that his own making was performed in the manner of fishes, his mother leaving a small pile of gleaming eggs in the depressed center of the mattress, his father passing over sometime later and glumly depositing his own sticky contribution. But all that aside, Caldwell knew that his father was otherwise occupied. He was that night busy fighting the storm. The story of Hurricane Hazel was every bit as important to the elder Caldwell as it would become to the younger, perhaps because it was the only time in his life that Caldwell's father did anything useful. There had been rain all that week, and the rivers and creeks to the north of Toronto were already brimming. When Hazel came on Friday afternoon and filled the world with wind and water, the rivers became riotous. The storm caught everyone by surprise. The radio reports had called merely for rain. But by little Caldwell's bedtime, flooding was certain. So while his father may have taken a few minutes to say goodnight to his son, it is not likely. His father was almost certainly outside, helping to pile sandbags along the banks of the normally docile Humber River. Back then, the Caldwells lived on Kingdom Street, a block away from the river, close enough that Caldwell's father feared the basement would flood and destroy his workbench and power tools. Caldwell couldn't recall his father ever actually making anything, but throughout his life the older man maintained a professionally equipped shop in the basement of whatever house they lived in. After being placed in his little bed, Caldwell had not fallen asleep. He had immediately raised himself up onto his knees and looked through the window. He was amazed at the sight. The rain did not come down, it blew in all directions. It obscured the world in the same manner in which Caldwell destroyed drawings he deemed poor, with violent cross-hatching. The boy was delighted at how musical the wind was making everything. The window glass vibrated in its frame with a low, steady hum. Caldwell must have slept, but this was not part of his memory. He knew he fell asleep because he had checked all the newspaper reports and the official police records. Caldwell knew the sequence of events that took place a little after 3 a.m. He knew the logic and causality. The Humber River grew bigger and stronger and finally threw over the footbridge, the concrete walkway that allowed people in his neighborhood of Westmount easier access to the shops on Weston Road. The bridge was toppled, and when it fell, it became a dam, turning the water aside. The river had nowhere to go but down Raymore Drive. Kingdom Street shared backyards with the houses on Raymore Drive. Caldwell's bedroom was at the back of the house, which means that when he once again knelt on his mattress and chinned up by the windowsill, he was staring at the houses on Raymore. He was never sure what woke him up, but it seems likely that it was screaming. When he grew up, it occurred to him that the houses had been too far away and the wind howling too fiercely for him to have heard anything. But the screams may have been so anguished that they somehow pierced Caldwell's ears, And he raised himself up and saw a wall of water move down the street and gather up the houses. It did this like a janitor gathering up chairs in a grade school auditorium. By the time the river was done, it had pushed 17 houses off the face of the earth. 35 people, including Caldwell's playmate Kenny Janes, were gone forever. And Caldwell had watched them disappear.